This is Cashflow Ninja, episode 162, with Tone Vase.
Welcome to the Cashflow Ninja, the podcast empowering and inspiring people to discover how to generate their own income and manage, grow, and protect their own wealth in the new economy. Now, here is your host, MC Laubscher.
Hi there, MC Laubscher here, and welcome to another episode of the Cashflow Ninja. I have a great show for you today, and in today's show, we're going to be exploring the revolutionary Bitcoin digital currency. My guest in this episode is Tone Vase. Tone has worked on Wall Street for almost 10 years, starting as a risk analyst at Bear Stearns and later becoming the vice president at JP Morgan Chase in the aftermath of the 2008 financial crisis. His expertise is in economic trends, trading, and risk analysis. Ever since getting involved in the cryptocurrency ecosystem in early 2013, he has been very active in spreading the relevance and importance of this technology as it helps to promote economic freedom. Tone was recently featured in a Bitcoin documentary, Magic Money. By the way, I recommend everyone should watch that. He was formerly head of research at Brave New Coin after previously writing about trading and economics at Cointelegraph. Tone is now an independent content creator at Liberty Life Trail, focusing on sound economics, privacy, free thinking, and adventurous travel. Tone holds a master's degree in financial engineering from Florida State University, along with a bachelor's degree in mathematics and geology. Please share your feedback and thoughts with me on today's interview. You can let me know your thoughts on Twitter by tweeting me at MC Laubscher or by email at info@cashflowninja.com. And please remember to join our mailing list by signing up at cashflowninja.com or texting cashflowninja, one word, all capitalized, to 44222. That's two fours and three twos. You can support the show by becoming a patron on Patreon for $10 a month. And when you become a patron, you get access to our private Facebook page and a Cashflow Ninja t-shirt. You can become a patron by visiting cashflowninja.com/support. Have you read Rich Dad Poor Dad? Are you interested in real estate investing and don't know where to start or to get the results you want? For valuable information to get you started, visit JoinOps Properties at joinopsproperties.com. If you're not earning at least 8% on your cash, you do not want to miss the private lending presentation for non-accredited investors done by Jimmy Freeland and Bob Scott. Discover how to create an income stream from real estate without the management headaches. You can access the presentation at cashflowninja.com/private lending. Spartan Invest have a proven plan and system helping investors creating passive income and wealth through turnkey real estate ownership in the exciting market of Birmingham, Alabama. Find out why Birmingham has got it going on, why it's a steal right now, why it's a millennial hangout, a hidden gem, and one of the most exciting investment opportunities you have never heard of. You can download your free report, 5 Big Reasons to Invest in the Magical City of Birmingham, Alabama, at cashflowninja.com/Spartan. I've spoken about the most powerful system on the planet on the show, the banking system, and my firm Valhalla Wealth Financial helps people reclaim the banking function within their own lives through leveraging the premium tools and strategies of the wealthy. If you're interested in reclaiming the banking function within your own life and the infinite banking concept, you can access a free webinar presentation at cashflowninja.com/be the bank. Tone, welcome to the show.
No, thank you. I'm glad to be on.
Can you please share a little bit about your background and journey with my listeners?
Sure. I always have to try and keep this brief because it has been a long journey to come here. After I got a graduate degree in financial engineering, and I was originally like studying science and math and was going to be a teacher, and that just wasn't going to be for me. So I went out, I got a master's degree in financial engineering, and eventually found a job at Bear Stearns, of all companies, in 2007, so about 1.5 years before the actual collapse of Bear Stearns. And I had a front row seat for the financial crisis. Even though I wasn't financially affected, I didn't have that much money to invest. So I didn't lose much on the stock market crash. And my job kind of transitioned into JP Morgan because our unit at Bear Stearns was profitable. But I got to just watch this insane craziness, the euphoria over real estate, and then the disastrous outcomes. And that's when I kind of got into this whole libertarian movement, that migrated into this whole like anarcho-capitalist movement, and where you pick up and start listening to people like Ron Paul, like you know, the Jeff Berwick podcast, some of the other ones, and you start to become a gold bug, and you start thinking, okay, this whole system is going to collapse. And that kind of led me into Bitcoin. I know Max Kaiser was one of my original influencers. And that led me into Bitcoin. And I knew about Bitcoin from the early days, but I didn't get around to buying any Bitcoin until 2013, right into that mania of the price going from about $100 to $1,000. And I'm like, oh my God. So now I'm supposed to be the trader, and I just got caught in a bubble. And I really took the time to understand Bitcoin, not just buying it to get rich, but like, why are you buying it? And that led me into being a speaker, being a content creator, and just trying to bring some professionalism and some economic sense to what this Bitcoin technology and financial system really, really means. And because of what's happening right now in the space, which we're going to get into, I started to understand why the world comes up with these harsh regulations that everybody hates, because so many people get hurt with all of the snake oil salesmen and all of these get rich quick schemes. And just give me money and you will earn, 100% a year interest. And I'm right in the middle of it. And it's really fascinating, really, really fascinating.
No, extremely fascinating. And to your point, you've put out fantastic content about Bitcoin and helping understand exactly what it is, instead of just being, okay, this is like the latest craze, right? Cryptocurrency. So you, very good point. You have to know what it is and how it operates and the philosophy behind it. And that's the one thing that I've really liked about it too. For me personally, it just from the research and stuff, it really is a start to have people question, what is money? what is the goal of money? What is the medium of exchange? And to your point about the regulations too, I mean, PayPal started as a way of really moving money around from one person to another person, but they ran up against the enormous 900-pound gorilla in the room called the state and government regulations.
Right, absolutely. I mean, PayPal could have been what Bitcoin is today, but they did not have the technology behind it to allow it to be decentralized without any central points of failure, without CEOs, without offices, and without anything backing it. One of the reasons why something like eGold failed was because there was gold sitting in a vault that someone could come in and confiscate.
Right. At any point in time, if men with guns can come in and just take whatever you have, there's a lot of at risk there. And I mean, this is transferring money, quote unquote, from one person to another as quick as sending an email to anywhere in the world. So phenomenal technology. Now, I thought what we've seen to be perceived as bad news for Bitcoin, when the Winklevoss's Bitcoin ETF was blocked, there's an ongoing block size debate and other factors, but Bitcoin has really exploded. What is going on with Bitcoin, and what are the factors that have driven the spike in Bitcoin's price relative to US dollars and euros?
Okay, so there's a lot there. I was a little bit against the Winklevoss ETF. I think Bitcoin is a brand new asset class that we're still trying to learn and understand. And what happens is people just have this irrational exuberance and they jump on board. Bitcoin has a couple of properties. What Bitcoin did is it found a technological innovative way for a digital message to be transferred over the internet with finality. Basically, it's a censorship-resistant message that once you hit the send button, you lose control of that message. It's gone. And this is why this message itself has become valuable to the tune of about $2,500 per Bitcoin, but it's infinitely divisible, or close enough to infinitely divisible. And so people can still send $5, $10 in Bitcoin to each other. It'll just be significantly less than one Bitcoin. And a term that kind of left the financial world a long time ago because of government regulation and government money is the idea of a bearer instrument. So a bearer asset is an asset that you hold, whoever holds it owns it, basically. That doesn't happen with your house, let's say. Your name is on a deed somewhere filed with the government. So no random person can just take your house, okay? But with like cash dollars in your pocket, if you lose your wallet, somebody else picks it up. They now have your cash and they can go and spend it. That cash isn't registered to you. Gold kind of works the same way if you're holding gold coins. But if you're holding gold, you know, with an institution, then they have your name on file. The bad news is everyone knows you have the gold. The good news is no one else can claim it but you. So it's it depends what you're comfortable with. Bitcoin is a bearer asset. So that means whoever holds it owns it. So if the ETF was to come online, the Winklevoss brothers, who would be in charge of the ETF, would also be in charge of the security of that Bitcoin backing the ETF. And to me, that there is a risk because the more people buy the ETF shares, the more Bitcoin this company or these two brothers have to be responsible for. And we all know how difficult internet security is. It's even more difficult where there's billions of dollars on the line to be stolen with this bearer asset. So having all this Bitcoin in a single account being held, trying to secure it, opens it up to external hackers. I know somebody sitting in Russia or China, they can hack in. Difficult, but possible. Internal hackers, a disgruntled employee, found a way to just steal it. Or, like we said earlier in the show, man with guns coming in and saying it's ours. Okay, so these are just some of the risks. Now, at the same time as the ETF was rejected, we had the debate over scaling. Bitcoin has a bit of an issue right now, and we knew this problem for, there were several technological problems that need to be fixed in order for Bitcoin to really honestly, I don't even know what it is. Is it a currency? I call it a value transfer. Because the word currency has a certain definition, the word money has a certain definition, and yes, these definitions can change over time, but I like to refer to Bitcoin as permissionless value transfer. And this permissionless value transfer of Bitcoin has some technological limits. At the moment, we are stuck with about 3 to 4 transactions per second, which is not a lot with the popularity that Bitcoin is getting. And there is one really good solution on the table, but some people are fighting it because it interferes with their interests and most likely their economic interests, their political interests. And Bitcoin can't just adopt technological changes because that's what gives it security. The fact that it's hard to make a technological change in Bitcoin is what makes it a store of value. If anyone can just change anything in Bitcoin, then there will not be 21 million Bitcoins forever. You can have an inflation rate. It may not be censorship resistant, and there could be a man in the middle. Adopting a change to Bitcoin is very difficult. And in order for it to scale so that it can handle more than 3 to 4 transactions a second, requires 80 to 90% of the community in Bitcoin that runs these relay nodes to move transactions, that are mining this Bitcoin into existence, of which 25% is still out there to be found through math problems. 90% of this community needs to be on the same page. And if they're not, no one feels comfortable in adopting any changes, because we all know what 51% of the population can do. We can go all the way back to Russia in 1917, right, of what happens when 51% of the population wants something. So it has to be consensus, real consensus, that we're all on the same page. And when these controversies came in, people panicked, Bitcoin fell in price a little bit. But even if Bitcoin can't scale, even if it can't scale, even if it's stuck at this low transaction rate, and Bitcoin is now taking, you know, sometimes an hour to get your transaction, an hour is still better than multiple days, yeah, and it's still a censorship-resistant transaction, and it's now a lot more expensive to send your Bitcoin around. It used to cost a couple of pennies. Now it can cost as much as a couple of dollars. But the property of sending any amount of money in a reasonably short amount of time with no one being able to stop you, this is incredibly valuable. And people continue to see Bitcoin as this new technology, the one with the most security, the one with the smartest people trying to fix all of its problems. And it has become the backbone of all of these other copycats and tokens and alternatives to Bitcoin that are able to give you, you know, way better returns, but they're all speculative. None of these other coins have any actual use cases. There is underlying demand for Bitcoin. There are people that need it in order to put food on the table, and that doesn't happen with any other alternatives at the moment.
What are some of the factors that you think is just driven, to such a level right now? And are there any other factors that could cause the price of Bitcoin to fall just as fast as it has spiked?
Yes. There's never a single catalyst. Like, markets never fall because of one thing. Markets never go up because of one thing. Yes, there are black swan events that are obvious. Like, when Trump was being elected, the markets were crashing that night. And in my videos, I kept saying, well, yeah, the markets will crash because nobody wants Trump to get elected, because, you know, their golden goose of corruption might end. We'll see how Trump does. One of the reasons to get into politics is, to participate in the corruption. They say it's easy to put an honest man in politics. It's very difficult to keep him honest after he gets in. And Trump is one of the few people that doesn't need the money. He doesn't need any additional perks after he's gone being a president, which is why Wall Street was supporting Hillary, which is why the industry was supporting Hillary. And they were crashing the market to kind of create the illusion that Trump would be bad. And the market immediately reversed and went to the upside. So what happens in Bitcoin is people start to realize its properties and how useful they are. I personally got into Bitcoin because of Cyprus events, when Cyprus banks got shut down and 40% of everyone's bank account above $100,000 was just confiscated. That bothered me. And I said, you know what? There has to be another way to hold on to something of value that no one can confiscate. And Bitcoin hasn't even proven it. So far, it's been able to be the censorship-resistant value transfer and value storage. But this is still very new, very speculative technology. I'm hoping it lasts a while. I am financially invested in it lasting a while. But the jury is still out. The jury is still out. And but what can cause it to crash again? Well, if we can't scale it, if there is so much demand for Bitcoin that it clogs the network and there are also malicious actors that are spamming the network. It's like your email box. Because email was free, you were bombarded with spam. And email providers had to constantly fight the spam. They have to come up with better spam filters, better spam identification. I don't know when the last time anyone has looked in their spam folder, but it's ridiculous in there, right? And now imagine if every email cost a little bit of money. It would definitely cut the spam down, but it also creates a problem because if email can only be transferred at, let's say, 2 or 3 emails a second, people will, and you still have to pay to send it, people will still pay a penny to get it in there, but now you have to pay $5 to actually get yours through above the rest. So there are still bad actors. People have been trying to hack the Bitcoin network and just spam it in order to have their agenda be added to the code. It's no different than, you know, you create all these problems and then you have the solution to the problems that you created if you get voted in. Bitcoin technology works the same way. If there's a technological problem, like too much spam, someone will provide the solution to that spam. And sometimes the loudest voice gets the most attention. And if this loudest voice is one is causing a lot of these problems, he has a better idea on being that voice and standing up. So so there are issues that we need to overcome. That's one thing that could cause the price to drop. And other technological issues, honestly, I don't see what separates Bitcoin from any alternative is all of the alternatives have a person in charge. They have an entity in charge. They have people or places where government with their guns can show up, and that would cause panic. Everything from the U.S. dollar to the stock market to the bond market to the housing market, 80% of what gives it value is confidence. It's people's confidence. The dollar is just strengthening left and right because the world believes in the U.S. dollar. They have the confidence in the U.S. government to keep the U.S. dollar stable is significantly higher than any other currency. And same thing here. And this is where Bitcoin has an enormous advantage is that there is nothing that any government can do to stop it. There's nobody to arrest. There's nobody to go after. They can try and compete in mining and the security of Bitcoin, but they're just as likely to make it stronger by using their money, resources, and electricity than they are to hijack the network and take control of it. So I don't see anything that governments can do to cause a panic in Bitcoin. It's just a matter of will we scale in time for this demand coming into Bitcoin because demand is just growing. And one of the reasons why the demand is growing is because the price is going up and people fear that they've missed their chance to get rich but it's still going up. And I think the hype cycle is starting up again. I mean, I'm an analyst. I'm a trader. I do a lot of technical analysis. From the beginning of the year, I was looking for Bitcoin to get this euphoric high going into August. And it looks like August is where we can actually scale and this code gets into the system. And I don't want to push people into a bubble, but I think Bitcoin price will continue to rise into the summer. And then the bigger it rises, the bigger the crash will be. And you just hope that the crash is above the level where you got in. Because for a lot of people, it'll be lower than that. But you have to understand why you're buying Bitcoin. And when I first got into Bitcoin, I watched the value of my Bitcoin fall 75% in price, twice actually. But I believed in the underlying technology and I stuck with it. But for a lot of people, they'll panic on the way up and they'll panic on the way down. And I really want to try and make them realize that what bubbles are and how they happen, and it's all human nature.
Very important. I think you said it in the beginning of our conversation, is get rich quick schemes and making a quick buck. And this is a very, very important lesson that you're sharing with my listeners. You have to understand the underlying technology, what it is, and know what you're getting into, number one. And number two, you know, you had mentioned that when you first got into it, and it happened twice to you, 75% of the value of the Bitcoins was lost at certain points of time. But because you were in it, understanding the technology and believing in there, you saw it down the line. So there was a vision and a strategy that way. So be very, very careful to try and make a quick buck now and just jump in and throw a lot of money into this and think that you're going to make a lot of money. So it's still an asset class, which you have to understand and you have to look at. Now, you had mentioned, Tone, the technicals about the summer too. So on from a short-term perspective towards the summer, and there will be a correction at some point, because I'm seeing in the media the traction. You know, the first thing people were laughing at Bitcoin, oh, tokens, you know. The second thing is when they started getting a little bit nervous and scared, then all of a sudden you get the propaganda of, drug dealers and terrorists are using Bitcoin. And now it's kind of changing to where, you know, it's getting a little bit of different media coverage just from browsing the media today. So the mania phase, as you were saying, is there's more people now that are lured into it that it would never have ever taken a second look. Where do you see Bitcoin in about in the next 5 years? We've touched upon it on the short term.
Oh, wow. So, Bitcoin is being laughed at even more today than it was years ago, because now everyone laughs at Bitcoin, how slow it is and how old it is and how clunky it is and how useless it is, because all Bitcoin ever promised, and it didn't even promise it, people like me promised it, censorship resistant value transfer, never promised to rebuild the internet, never promised to, you know, all of these dreams, but all of these other projects are coming out that are, we are the new world computer. We will have smart contracts. Everyone is trying to tokenize. Everyone is trying to get around the idea that just give us your money, we'll have a token. To me, it feels like, you know, Netflix creating its own stock with in the very beginning for funding purposes, and then charging people their stock in order to buy a movie to watch. I mean, to me, it's absolutely crazy. I am personally witnessing what the dot-com bubble was like. But here's the dilemma. Is this the dot-com bubble from a 1994-95 perspective? Or is it the 1999-2000 perspective? And no one knows. We don't know how high it can get. But if I look out 5 years, I still strongly believe that Bitcoin is the backbone of a new asset class that is this permissionless value transfer. And people will be comfortable with it. As an analogy, I saw on Twitter, so I don't take credit for it. I wish I could. It was like back in the late 90s, everyone was like, no, oh my God, AIM is the messenger? God, don't talk to anyone online. God forbid you're going to go outside and they'll pull up in a car. You'll get into their car. And now the most popular application is to get into a stranger's car through the internet to get somewhere with Uber, right?
Right. Oh, that's hysterical. And it's and to your point, just like with social media, right, there's going to be a MySpace. And in between all of these altcoins, yeah, too.
But people have to realize that, look, we now have a censorship-resistant value transfer. And right now, everyone is throwing the fear out there. Drug dealers are using it. You know, escorts are using it. It's great for gambling. Tax evasion is something to consider also. Obviously, I already mentioned the drug market. Terrorist financing. Yeah, but like every time I hear someone talk about terrorists, I always raise my hand at these conferences and ask them, can you please define what a terrorist is? because it's a very tricky definition. It's basically someone that somebody else doesn't like.
Right.
And to be honest with you, it's subjective. And yes, there are, you can't give value to bad people, but at which point do you just control what people can and can't buy, who people can and can't give value to? And the trickiest situation at all, how do you know? You just provide it. You have to prove intent. You have to prove that you've given value on purpose to someone causing harm. Because when it comes to the law and the courts, they care about their numbers more than they care about justice. They'll put an innocent person away for 30 years if it looks good on their record and becoming a federal judge in the future. Right. So, which is a big problem, because all they have to do is they don't even care if you did it, by accident. If they can prove it, that you did it, you go away. Like that famous book, you know, 3 felonies a day. If they can bust you, they'll bust you. So you have to be really careful with that. And, just because something is bad, sorry, just because something is good for bad actors, it doesn't imply that it's bad for everything else. There's a reason why, let's say, an escort and someone selling drugs, they like Bitcoin. They like it because it's permissionless value transfer, and that's good for everyone. That's not just they're just recognizing it first. It doesn't mean that it's bad. Like the rumors were probably true. The first 20 or 30% of the people on AOL Instant Messenger were bad actors. They probably were child molesters trying to get, you know, young teenagers out of the house. But eventually you realize that the technology is good for everyone. The technology does not create any bad actors. An honest person will not suddenly start becoming dishonest. Unless he gets elected to public office, probably different, probably a different discussion. But people don't just become dishonest because the technology allows them to be that. It's a personality, and bad actors usually discover new technology first. I even take it back to cars. When the cars came out, who had the best advantage? Probably the bank robbers. They probably were buying those cars first because they can get away from the cops on horses real quick.
Right.
I mean, the bad actors, they just discover technology goes to their advantage, but the advantage applies to everyone. So in 5 years, I still see Bitcoin surviving. I see Bitcoin being this generational changing technology that's going to make governments more responsible, not just with their money, but with their laws. Right now, we're seeing, you know, drugs becoming legalized, prostitution slowly becoming legalized, gambling becoming these voluntary transactions. They need to be legalized. Policing voluntary transactions is very costly to a society, and it raises taxes and it removes productivity, and it just like lowers a country's GDP. And when you have something like Bitcoin, which allows people to pay for these voluntary transactions, governments will have to relax a lot of their laws. In fact, the only way to fight Bitcoin and to eliminate Bitcoin is to remove laws on money and laws on voluntary transactions. Like my retirement is in Bitcoin, and if the government eliminates money laundering laws, I might lose a lot of money because of that, because that goes against what Bitcoin is good for. I think money laundering laws are atrocious. So I think in 5 years, trying to have a war on Bitcoin is going to be very expensive, and your focus is better. If you're scared that Bitcoin is going to be used for really nefarious purposes, like let's say assassinations, like, oh, now you can like pay an assassin online and it's so much easier. Well, then devote resources to policing that instead of policing an escort, instead of policing marijuana, instead of policing some guy who wants to play poker at night. Don't police that. put your resources on the really bad stuff instead of trying to police everything. And that's my hope of how something like having this decentralized distributed value transfer will force governments to be honest. Also, something like tax collection. Like, we don't know what, I mean, they say tax collection is, you know, transparent, but I don't see it that way. I would love to like literally vote if they can't force to collect taxes from me, if they can only collect taxes voluntarily, I would love to only contribute to projects that I like roads, maybe schools, though I'd rather have them privatized, and some kind of defense, definitely not offense. Just have more of a say. Like, people would have more of a say of what they're doing with their hard-earned money and not just let the politicians decide.
And that would put the onus on the politicians and the government to actually provide value, because if it's voluntary and it's voluntary exchanges, people will exchange value for value. So that'll force them to provide value for people. You're listening to Tone Vase on the Cashflow Ninja podcast. We will be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Are you having a hard time finding great investment properties? Unfortunately, the best deals are rarely found locally. Successful investing begins with the right properties in the right markets. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best deals across the U.S. Our simple, proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly cash flow. Get your free copy of The Ultimate Guide to Passive Real Estate Investing at noradarealestate.com/guide. That's noradarealestate.com/guide.
You're listening to Tone Vase on the Cashflow Ninja podcast, and now back to our interview. The other thing that I wanted to jump into is the trading. Now, you trade Bitcoin, and I just had a couple of questions about that as well, since a lot of the big focus of what my show is on cash flow strategies. Are there any cash flow creating strategies out there with cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin, or is it purely a speculation play or a buy and hold at the moment strategy?
Okay, so this is a very interesting topic. There's a I'm starting to become a fairly popular person in the crypto space. I do analysis videos on my YouTube channel, and I talk about trading Bitcoin and the price of Bitcoin and all of these, and occasionally the alternative cryptos. I actually do not trade Bitcoin.
Okay.
And the most popular thing right now is trading altcoins, which are like, I guess, Bitcoin's copycats in a way. Mm-hmm. But I am a trader. I still trade traditional assets. I've traded options, futures, equities. I've traded pretty much everything in all kinds of strategies. At this point, I'm only sticking to options trading because that one works best for me. There's a couple of reasons why I don't trade Bitcoin. And Bitcoin has been great. A lot people have made a lot of money trading Bitcoin. People have made tons of money trading altcoins. So many people, I get messaged every day, Tone, how come you don't trade this stuff? It's easy money. We're all millionaires. And I'm like, you know what? Because I won't be. I know what I'm good at. And I don't believe in the hype cycle. So I like trading the regulated markets because I know that the money at my brokerage account in US dollars is secure. Okay, it's assigned to my name. I pay taxes on it. These are legit institutions. There's two reasons why I don't trade Bitcoin. One is I've now talked about trading and price predictions and all that. I have discovered that I am a much better analyst of an asset that I do not trade. It makes me a lot more neutral and a lot more objective when I don't trade it. I also don't talk up my trade. I don't talk down my trade. And I don't need to, you know, I don't have to be right. So I have decided that I will never talk about the things I actually trade and only talk about the things that I don't trade, because it allows me to be more objective. And I've been incredibly accurate with my Bitcoin price predictions. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that I am not trading it. I'm just holding it. And I've talked about Bitcoin going down. And if it goes down, I'll hold through it. I don't mind. I believe it's a good store of value. There are other risks involved. Most of the trading, even if you're trading Bitcoin with an accredited, legit institution, there is always risk of a hack, like we talked about earlier in the show, because Bitcoin itself is a bearer asset. So my broker, where my money is and my stocks are, that's not going to be hacked. It never has. It never will. There are occasional instances like MF Global or Bernie Madoff, but these are few and far between, and they're generally rare. In the Bitcoin space, it's very different because even if you're trading with a legitimate exchange, the underlying Bitcoin can be stolen, and there's almost no recourse from that. If we go one step further, trading Bitcoin with these alternatives that are high-flying penny stocks, that is a completely unregulated space. And we've already had several instances of the exchange that is holding your Bitcoin just takes it and disappears. Not only can they be hacked externally or internally, they can also just disappear with all of your money. There is also a lot of coordinated pumps and dumps, and I'm not involved in those communities, mostly because I don't have the time. I'm aware of these communities, but I travel the world. I speak at conferences, and I know we're in a bubble, but this bubble can last for years. And I know people are going to get hurt. And I'm not confident enough to know, or maybe I'm a little more humble than others to know what I don't know. And what I don't know is when this bubble is going to pop. And I don't want to be the one left holding the bag. So I try not to trade it. I just try to talk about it objectively and inform people on my channels and social media.
The other question that I had for you too is tax implications with cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin. Is there any advice that you can share with people just to be cognizant to know that exchanges, for example, like Coinbase, they do have the crosshairs of the IRS on them, and there are still taxable events when this happens. Anything you can share in those regards?
Oh, it's, again, a difficult question, which I like. I like difficult questions. So IRS is one of the few institutions you really don't want to cross anywhere in the world. And they will go after you. And for me, they're really, this is bad. I mean, taxes have generally been one of the biggest cause of revolutions in the history of the world. And governments keep pushing. They keep pushing. I mean, the French Revolution was because of taxes. The American Revolution was because of taxes. It's mind-blowing to me that the American government doesn't realize that the American Revolution happened because of taxes. And they just keep pushing. More and more taxes. Trump comes in, tries to lower taxes. Everybody fights him. It's absolutely fascinating. So when it comes to taxes, so it's all about what a lot of people say. They don't want to get in trouble. They say it's your patriotic duty to pay taxes. What I say is it's your patriotic duty to pay the least amount of taxes you can legally get away with. For some people, it's hiring very expensive accountants. For some people, it's knowing all the tax rules. And for some people, it's being very careful with what you buy and what you sell. If you're buying Bitcoin through a government deputized institution that is aware of you buying Bitcoin, you want to comply with all of the tax laws because at any given moment, your information could be handed over to the IRS. And for me, the worst thing they can do is revoke my passport, which is what they're starting to do. You owe taxes, you can't fly out of the country, which is a problem. Oh, for me it is, because I love traveling the world and I love speaking at events. So you have to be careful. And what I say about Bitcoin is it's how you buy it. If you bought Bitcoin the way some people buy gold coins, you walk into a coin shop, you put a few hundred dollars on a table, they give you you know, the equivalent in silver and gold. You take those coins back home. It's up to you to decide how you're going to sell it. If you sell it back for cash, well, it's up to you to report it. If you sell it through a qualified institution, you may need to prove when and where you got it, which may actually be a little difficult. But if you know that someone else knows you own something and you're going to sell it for a profit, you may want to pay the taxes or you may take a chance and pay a small penalty, but you don't want to take a big chance and pay a big penalty. It's all up to the people. And if you're doing it in small transactions, to be honest, no one really cares, but you never know. So I treat Bitcoin, I am still very skeptical about Bitcoin's acceptance by governments. To this day, I have never used my Bitcoin in an identifiable way. By identifiable ways, it means buying Bitcoin through my bank account, selling Bitcoin through my bank account, which is possible, and these are regulated institutions. Let's say buying airline tickets with Bitcoin. I've never done that. You can do that. I mean, Expedia.com lets you pay in Bitcoin. Other things like that. There's even middlemen that will let you buy from Amazon. You pay a middleman in Bitcoin, and then they'll buy your things at Amazon. I'm still skeptical that Bitcoin will be accepted in the near term by governments because they're so scared of money. They're so scared that everyone is a tax evader. Bitcoin like flies in the face of that. And the only reason why I think Bitcoin is so valuable is because people are putting their money where their mouth is, that government will not be able to do anything about it, and they will have to adjust and be less authoritarian in regards to other people's money. And that's the bet that I'm making, but I'm too risk averse. I'm still a little worried that the governments will act hostily towards Bitcoin. And the advantage that I still see Bitcoin having is there's just nobody to go after, unlike all of these alternatives, and which is why I don't participate in any of the alternatives, not Ethereum, not Ripple, not
Litecoin.
Litecoin is similar to Bitcoin, not Monero. I think they're not even close in long-term viability as Bitcoin, because of all the investment that has gone into it, all the effort, all the programming effort. So I don't participate in the altcoins. I'm very aware of the space. And I try to expose some of those alternatives as outright scams. And I even have a podcast for that called Crypto Scam, where I try and explain the details of some of these alternatives one at a time. And they do get kind of complicated.
Now, Tony, one habit I've observed from wealthy and successful people is that they're always studying new subjects and learning new skill sets. What are you currently studying and what skill sets are you currently learning?
Oh, wow. Rich and successful. One day I'll get there. So I've gone through several career changes. Like I said, I started out as a teacher and then I went on Wall Street. And then I joined this crypto space, and I'm really liking content creation. And I've always, for the first 2 to 3 years of me being a voice in the space, I let someone else hit the record button. And you would know how difficult it is to finally hit the record button and deal with the responsibilities and the consequences of being the guy actually hitting the button and not a guest. Criticism on everything. Every little thing gets criticized. So over the last, I would say, 6 months, all of my free time is spent learning how to be a good content creator, learning video editing, learning sound editing. I know I can outsource these things, but I feel like I need to know it before I outsource it. Learning how to make, like the pictures on like the YouTube videos. I don't even know what they are.
The thumbnails.
The thumbnails, right. Yeah. So learning graphic design. So this is the skill set I'm currently learning. And hopefully Bitcoin would go up higher in value. My portfolios would have better returns. And I also spend a lot of time trying to develop my own trading system. I think it's very important. Following somebody else's trading is not how you want to be trading. You can be the guy other people follow, but I never wanted to manage other people's money. I'm always scared to manage other people's money. And I've never been a good follower. Like, I've played sports my whole life. I always end up being the captain of a team, even though I'm never the best player on that team. Just, I've never been a good follower. I've always just done my own thing. And I spent a lot of time developing my own trading strategies. And I think one or two of them are pretty successful. And if they continue to provide better than average returns for 5 or 10 years, I will have a decision to make in the future. Do I want to publish the strategy and give it up and be famous with it? Or do I want to let it continue and make money? So a lot of time was spent on just developing what works for me as far as trading traditional markets and becoming a content creator, because I really, really like it. So that's the skill set I'm learning now. And I'm about to go on an adventure studying the history of bubbles, from Tulip Mania to the South Sea Bubble to the Mississippi Company to the dot-com bubble, just really digging into them and try and inform my listeners as to what is about to happen in this crypto space, because I don't think anything other than Bitcoin has a real foundation to stand on, and I have no clue how big it's going to get.
That is very interesting that you just mentioned that too, because I started reading a little bit too on the Tulip Mania bubble and so forth to try and do a possible episode for my listeners and explain, like, this was the South Sea bubble, this was the Tulip Mania bubble, this is what, you know, and kind of look at the commonalities of each bubble and the phases. So fascinating stuff. But Tony, a core message in our show is to leave our families, communities, and the world better than we found it by passing down a mindset, values, and principles to future generations, not just money. So if you cannot pass on any money to future generations, and we're only allowed to pass on 3 principles to them to build wealth and achieve happiness and success, what would they be?
So my first principle, I'm not ready for this segment. But my first principle would be, because I've been my family immigrated to America, and we never really had money. I went to like public school, when I was a kid, you know, I went to a state school. My family didn't have much money. We immigrated to America. We were like immigrants on food stamps when we got here. And after that, you know, I got my degree. I started out as a teacher. And then I worked on Wall Street making a really good salary, you know, like a good 6-figure salary. And then I just quit that, came to the Bitcoin space, and then the price of Bitcoin dropped all the way down. I tried like investing some of the Bitcoin that I had into companies, and that didn't work out. So I've been broke, I've been rich, I've been broke, and I'm hopefully on my way to being rich again. And the one thing I want to pass on to people, whether you're rich or poor, stick to what you need. Don't buy the wants and just buy the needs. You don't need a fancy expensive car. You don't need a big expensive house. Stick to what you need. Don't impress people with money. Be more humble about it. And don't spend too much. Yeah, you can buy nice things here and there, but understand why you're buying them. You want to reward yourself every now and then. But what I saw from the 2008 housing bubble is not how you want to live your life and then get into debt. So definitely stay out of debt. Don't get into debt. And don't try to impress people with money. So that's pretty much one. I might save the rest for future shows. Maybe you'll have me on again.
Yeah,
I think I had a second one I thought of earlier in the show, but I've already spoken so much. I've already forgotten what it was. But other than that, yeah, so learn about investing. Here we go. We'll do a second one. If you're going to invest in something, understand why you're buying it. I'm not saying you have to do fundamental analysis, but don't rush into any investment because someone else is getting rich on that investment. This was the house flipping of 2007. This was the tech boom. Like, yeah, you can probably buy the entire tech sector, but if you're going to buy an individual asset, understand why you are buying it. Like, I understand why I'm in Bitcoin, but if you don't understand what Bitcoin is, don't, you can rush and buy a little bit of it just so you're there and then take the time to understand it. And if you're going to buy anything else in the crypto space outside of Bitcoin, understand what you're buying and listen to the criticism. I have criticism on everything, including Bitcoin itself. In episode one of Crypto Scam, I talked about Bitcoin. Are we all crazy? Is Bitcoin going to scam all of us? And I talked about it. I was skeptical of my own investment. So if you are going to invest, it's hard-earned money. Everyone has a specialty in life that earns them a living and a saving. Don't throw away that saving on someone else's words. If you're going to put your money into something, do some due diligence and at least understand why you're buying it. And if it crashes, understand why it crashed. And that's another very important lesson. Hopefully people will take to heart and look into some of these things before putting their money in.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. Don, how can my listeners learn more about you, the podcast, your YouTube channel, and stay informed of all of the projects that you're involved with?
Sure. I have my website, which I promise I will update because I do so much content on the internet. And I used to do original content on my website, but now I just put the content from all around the web onto my website. I'm a little bit behind. But my website is libertylifetrail.com. It was originally designed for more than the crypto space. It was going to be about economics and traveling and living an independent lifestyle. And lately it has become more on the crypto space because that's the hot topic of the day. So you can go to libertylifetrail.com. It's best to follow me on Twitter. I am fairly active on Twitter, at ToneVase, T-O-N-E. V-A-Y-S. You can also find me on YouTube, on my YouTube channel. Again, you just have to Google Tone Vase on YouTube, where on my personal YouTube channel, I have two podcasts. One is a twice weekly economics and price, I guess, prediction or analysis of Bitcoin, some altcoins, S&P 500, gold, oil, currencies. I try to talk about everything and where I see the economy going. I do that twice a week. My podcast, Crypto Scam, is also on my YouTube channel. And you can also find me on the World Crypto Network, which is a channel with several contributors in the crypto space, where I am part of two additional podcasts on the World Crypto Network YouTube. And I speak all over the world at conferences. Sometimes about traditional markets, sometimes about Bitcoin, sometimes about politics. I've spoken at the same events as Gary Johnson at like Liberty Fest. Talking a little bit about government. So just look for me at a conference in your city or country, and I try to keep an updated calendar on libertylifetrail.com.
Fantastic. Don, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your journey and your knowledge and providing so much value for my listeners. This has been fantastic to connect, and I look forward to having you on in the future again.
No, thank you, MC. Glad to be on.
This is MC Laubscher, the host of the Cashflow Ninja podcast. As you may know, I'm also the president and chief wealth strategist of Valhalla Wealth Financial. We help individuals, families, Small businesses, entrepreneurs, and professionals build their wealth outside of Wall Street and help investors maximize the use of every dollar in their personal economy and boost their investment gains. We do this by combining the capital and investments with the financial vehicle of the wealthy according to the infinite banking concept. If you're interested to learn more about privatized banking and the infinite banking concept, you can access an exclusive webinar at cashflowninja.com/be the bank. Thank you for joining my guest, Tone Vase, and myself on the Cashflow Ninja today. If you like what you hear and appreciate what we're trying to build here at the Cashflow Ninja, please subscribe, rate, and review our show on iTunes and share our show with family, friends, and your network. I'm always trying to learn and improve in every area of my life, so if there's any way that I can provide more value to you and serve you better, please reach out to me at info@cashflowninja.com. If you're not a subscriber to the Cashflow Ninja Gushku newsletter, you can sign up for our newsletter at cashflowninja.com or text Cashflow Ninja to 44222. That's 2 4s and 3 2s. You can also support the show by becoming a patron on Patreon for $10 a month. When you become a patron for 12 months, you get access to our private Facebook page and a Cashflow Ninja t-shirt. Jimmy Freeland and Bob Scott have been in your shoes and have used real estate investing to become financially free. They've designed a system to take any beginner to an experienced deal-making investor in the least amount of time. They offer opportunities from basic education, coaching, bridge loan investing, to turnkey investments in the cash-flowing market of St. Louis, Missouri. For more information, please visit joinopsproperties.com or call Jimmy and Bob at 314-799-2247. If you're not earning at least 8% on your cash, you do not want to miss the private lending presentation for non-accredited investors done by Jimmy Freeland and Bob Scott. Discover how to create an income stream from real estate without the management headaches. You can access the presentation at cashflowninja.com/private lending. Creating passive income for you and your family is easier than you think. All you need are three things: the right plan, the right product, and the right turnkey provider. As an investor, you want a safe, profitable, and convenient way to invest your capital without being at the mercy of stock market fluctuation. Investing in real estate in a turnkey way that provides monthly passive income with very low risk is exactly what Spartan Invest provides for their clients. Their mission is to make investing in real estate easy for the busy professional. Spartan Invest help investors create passive income and wealth through turnkey ownership in Birmingham, Alabama. You can download your free report, 5 Big Reasons to Invest in the Magical City of Birmingham, Alabama, at cashflowninja.com/Spartan. The wealthiest families on the planet know how to capture their wealth and then leveraging their wealth through their own banking system. If you're interested in privatized banking and the infinite banking concept and learning the premier strategies of the wealthiest individuals and families on the planet, you can access your free webinar at cashflowninja.com/be the bank. That's our show for today, everyone. Until next time, live a life of passion and purpose on your terms.
You have been listening to the Cashflow Ninja with your host, MC Laubscher, the podcast empowering and inspiring people to discover how to generate their own income and manage, grow, and protect their own wealth in the new economy. Today's show notes and resources are available on our website, cashflowninja.com. This presentation is for educational and informational purposes only. The information being presented and considered does not consider your particular financial objectives or situation, and it does not make personalized recommendations. This material is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified tax and legal advisor or other qualified professionals, and you should not use the information in place of a customized consultation with a licensed professional regarding your specific personal financial objective, situation, and needs. We believe the information provided is reliable, but we do not guarantee its accuracy, timeliness, or completeness.